This is Dylan FM, the podcast that goes deep into the work and world of Bob Dylan. You're listening to an extended episode, available exclusively to FM Plus or premium subscribers, with your host, Craig Danieloff.
There are more than a few Bob Dylan album covers where we know a lot about the photographers and the photographs. Thanks to interviews with people like Daniel Kramer, who produced the Bringing It All Back Home cover, or Jerry Schatzberg, who took the famous blurry photo on Blonde on Blonde. Today we're going to learn the story of the World Gone Wrong cover photo, which was taken during the Blood in My Eyes video shoot. The cover photo on World Gone Wrong is distinctive, not the least because Dylan is wearing a top hat. But he's also in a striking setting, has great lighting with vibrant colors, and gives off a vibe which is just different from that he gives on every other album cover. Go to bobdylan.com, look at the man who's staring back at you on every cover from the first album through Springtime in New York. I think you'll notice a striking similarity in all of the faces except one. Even in 1961, Bob is confident. He looks like a centered person, someone who knows something and may be willing to tell you, but not on World Gone Wrong. That's a guy who may be in trouble and certainly does not exude confidence. He actually looks like he wants something, and it may be help. Our guest today took that photo and dozens of others that day. Her name is Ana Maria Velez Wood. She's Colombian, had a career as a dancer and a choreographer, as well as a singer-songwriter, but she's also a lifelong photographer. She toured with the Eurythmics, among others, which led her friend Dave Stewart to give her a call when he was shooting a video and wanted some photographs taken. Ana tells us the story of that day today and how her picture came to be on the cover of World Gone Wrong. If you've seen the Blood in My Eyes video, you know that Bob turned up in a top hat and a long black jacket and walked around the streets of Camden in London, talking to people and signing autographs. He even walked around with a gang of folks following behind him. The black and white video is distinctive for a number of reasons. And besides the World Gone Wrong cover, you've probably seen a few other photos from that day as they've been used in magazines and on book covers by Michael Gray and Greil Marcus. But Ana took several dozen beautiful photos that day, both color and black and white, of Dylan in the street, with people, getting filmed, walking with a dog, and hanging around in Camden Town. Like the video, they're wonderful and distinctive. You can see all of these pictures on Anna's website, which we link to in the show notes, and you can even order prints. She's held two exhibitions of these photographs, one in Sweden in 2005 and another in London in 2012. There's a link in the show notes to a video of the London show, and there's a gorgeous full-color catalog from that show. We're working with Ana to make some copies available, so make sure you're on our 7 days mailing list. You can join at freakmusic.substack.com if you'd like some info on picking one up, if we're able to make that happen. Ana was very generous in talking to us about that day, photographing Dylan, spending time with him after the shoot, and more. She's very thoughtful and shares great insights into the process and the people and the journey that a morning of photographs have taken her on for the last 30 years. Before listening to today's show, I'd strongly recommend you go watch the Blood in My Eyes video, especially if you haven't seen it in a while. There's a link in the show notes. We've got a great episode today, so let's talk with Ana Maria Velez Wood. Welcome, Ana Maria Velez Wood, who most people in the Dylan world don't know by name, but know her work, because she shot the cover photo for World Gone Wrong, and as we're going to talk about, a series of very interesting photographs of Bob Dylan in 1993 in London. But Ana, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
No, thank you so much for taking an interest on my photographs and the whole history around it. It's great to share it with all the Dylan fans.
Yeah, well, I only found out about your website recently, and I've obviously known the photographs, and we've seen them. I've got in the background, you're on the cover of the Greil Marcus book, and you've been on the cover of other books. And people know the top hat photos, right? Because of the million distinctive Bob Dylan photos, the top hat, and even many in hats. But you've got the only top hat photos, I think, So everyone knows them, but there's way more to the story, and there's way more photographs than most people know, which we'll link to your website so people can see them and they can even order prints. But you've got an interesting background in that you got there by almost coincidence, that you knew Dave Stewart because you had toured with the Eurythmics.
That's right. Yeah.
And he knew to call you. So if you don't mind, tell us the story of how it came to be and a little bit about your day, and then we'll talk about it more.
In 1993, I had already known Dave Stewart for maybe 4 years. I have toured with him with the Eurythmics and also with the Spiritual Cowboys, which was post Eurythmics. And he knows about my background in photography, because I've done photography since I was very young, and I always do photography, but photography has not been my real work. I just do, photos wherever I am, and I'm always kind of seeing things, and I've been a very, keen kind of photography adept. So what happened is that Dylan called him. I think he called him like at 2 a.m. or something like that. And he said, I want to do a video. And Dave, Dave is one of the pioneers of music videos. And he's a very visual person. He's actually a great photographer himself. And all to do with visuals. Music and visuals is all connected to him. So Dylan knows this. He knows Dave very well. They're very good friends. And he said, I want you to direct this video for me. And he said, tomorrow. And so Dave was very excited. He's a mega Dylan fan, as well as, being a friend. He's, he kisses the earth he walks in. But anyway, somehow he said, he called me, I think it was maybe 7 a.m. I had just gotten back from the Amazon. And I was really kind of trying to adapt to, I was in London, obviously, and I was trying to adapt, to the schedule. And so I was very, very jet lagged. And he said, listen, I need you to come and do these still photographs. I'm doing a video for Bob Dylan. And I said, okay, I'll be there. So I had to kind of, I stood and I got my camera ready. I had to repack because it was packed in a very funny way in a canteen, plastic canteen. So if I turn in the Amazon, everything floats in a canteen. So you have your most important belongings in a canteen. It's like a small milk canteen, plastic canteen. So I thought, I can't bring that. So I made my kind of normal photography bag, and I got there. And then the day began. And that's how I got to do the photographs. That was my connection. And, it was a very interesting day. Very, very interesting day. I went to the Church Studios. That was a recording studios in Crouch End that belonged to Dave Stewart. They don't belong to him anymore, but in those days, that was his recording studio. And I remember walking in and being introduced to Dylan, who just, he shake my hand and I said hello. But, because my life has been really out of phase. I've never realized I knew Bob Dylan, obviously, and I know, his big personality, but I was not completely aware of him as, the depth of his work and his artistry. And my whole background has been in so many different things. And, Bob Dylan was in the periphery, really. I didn't kind of thought much about it. And I said, I was also, how am I going to do these photographs and everything? And how is this? I didn't know what to expect. We went out to the lock in Camden Town. you know, for people who don't know, London is this part of London where there are canals. It's called the Lock in Camden Town, and there is a huge market, so it's full of people. And then we started.
Was anything, you know, blocked off, or there was locations reserved, or you were just going out into the public and whatever happened, happened?
No, there was nothing. There was nothing. We just went there, and then we had a few, about maybe 4 or 5 people with us. Dave had a camera, and then 2 other people had a camera, you know, I don't know, you know, small cameras. And then we had one person, a tall guy that I knew from music business who does security, but he was not official or anything. And, you know, we just went out. No kind of, no preparation or anything. It was a very spontaneous thing. And it was great. Dave is great at doing that. And I found out that Dylan match him very well for that, you know, and they just, we had a little tiny tape recorder who played this song, you know, a tiny little thing, played the song, and we had Dave filming. There were 2 other guys who were just kind of assisting him and filming, and this guy that I told you that it was kind of semi-security. It was not very official. He just kind of standing by. And apart from that, that was it. I think one of Dave's kids, who was very small at the time, was around in the nanny, or, you know, they were kind of very, very familiar, very kind of friendly. Nothing, you know, that made a lot of noise. However, as we started filming, I think people started to realize, you know, that we were doing a video, and who they recognized Dave, they recognized Dylan. Dylan, he was less recognizable to begin with, but he was so distinctive with that top hat.
Did the top hat come from Bob? Did it come from Dave? That it is distinctive.
I think that I know it came from Dylan. Yes, I don't know, but as long as I saw it and he was with the hat. So he must have thought about it, you know? He must have thought about it. And, you know, it's a very, very London thing, a top hat. It's not that nobody walks with a top hat here unless they're going to Ascot or something like that, you know? But it is a very distinctive British thing, a top hat. And I don't know if he thought about it, but it is very funny because some of the pictures, there is one picture in particular that I made in the exhibition, like I made it rounded and it looks just like Abraham Lincoln. It just is so Abraham Lincoln. It was like incredible. So I made it like a coin because when I saw it, and it was really difficult to do, to find somebody to do me that frame, the rounded frame. It was hard work. Nobody wanted to do a round frame. And I said, no, it has to be in a round frame. And it is a beautiful kind of image because it symbolizes so much for me, that image. However, we went around and we went around, you know, through different places, through the Lock, through the main street. And then we walk into one cafe where I shot that the cover. And I was shooting with 2 cameras. Those days were analog. It's all film. It's not digital. And I remember, because I only got the film that I got very quickly, and I had quite a lot of transparency film. And I thought, oh my God, this is incredible because the colors were so bright. And I said, I want them even brighter. So when I developed it, I did a reverse process. So that's why the colors are so vibrant. And it was all very, very fast. I mean, it's no pausing for any moment. It was really actually, you had to be really kind of alert because the shooting opportunities were scarce. It was like, it was gone, you see. And there were people coming in and sitting in with him and standing, and there were all the people, you know. It was not a lot of people, but it was still quite a few people, because between the cameras and the people that they were engaging to sit with him in the table, and the people who were playing the recorder, and, you know, it turns out to be maybe 10 people or...
Oh, so the people who talked to Bob were asked to talk to Bob versus kind of being...
Yes, they were,
they were hurt. I always thought they were just people on the street kind of bothering Bob.
Well, they were... No, it was... They were interested, and they definitely wanted to engage with him, but it so turned out that they wanted them to be on the picture, them meaning Bob and Dave, to be on the frame and be part of the filming. So some of them end up sitting with them, you know, in the cafe series, which is in my catalog, if you, in my exhibition, I have one set of photographs that is called the Cafe series. And the one that is the cover of the album, the World Gone Wrong album, is from the Cafe series. And if you see those photographs, there's quite a few different people that sat with him. There is this punk rocker, then there is an old lady, then is, you know, there's few people sitting with him at one time or another. But I think it is very curious, because I saw Dylan, it was beautiful to see him, how he was functioning, because I think he was very, very aware, but he was nearly not present. It was like he was present only on his own mission of doing this video. Yes. And you know, some people, there are some photographs, the ones that I took in the main street, where there are a lot of people coming and asking for autographs. And he was making it part of the video, but you see him, and he was, so he had an expression that it was, he was in the song, but sometimes he'll go out of character, and then you'll see, and you see it in the photographs as well, how he just kind of very softly smiles and then goes back into his kind of persona, video persona. And he never, you know, it was very smooth, very, you know, running very smooth, the whole thing. No kind of, you know, I've been in many video filmings and I've been in videos and, you know, and there is always who throws a tantrum in some way or another, because they are not happy with this or not happy with that. You know, it instigates a lot of nerves in people. He never had that. I never saw any of that.
Did the crowd or the people who realized it was Dylan ever get out of control? Because, you know, Dylan's whole life is him showing up somewhere and it building to a situation where he's got to leave because people aren't behaving. It sounds like this stayed okay.
No, it never got out of control, really. And then there is a moment where people are kind of recruited to walk behind him. There is a part that we're walking up from the lock up into a path and then crossing a bridge, and there are people, there is even a juggler kind of walking behind him. And they were all kind of recruited. Dave is a genius doing this. He knows how to kind of put people in the right place. And he may have said, oh, you just come. You know, they were curious. Oh, yes, you want to be part of it? Just walk behind it, probably. So it was never, you know, because I was taking the photographs, my mind was also somewhere else. So there's a lot that you miss because you have a tunnel vision. You're, you know, looking at a frame. And so I might have missed a lot of that, but I never felt that there was a situation where there was a threat where he had to run away, if you know what I mean. But yeah, there were a lot of people interested. And I think we went to have, after the filming, we went back to the studio in Crouch End. And I think he took a little rest. I think he was kind of trying to gather himself. I don't know if he went for a walk. I think he went for a walk as well. And I hear he does that from other people. He kind of takes off and goes for walks. But I didn't really notice. I remember when I went to meet him, there was something really funny because Dave, and he's done this to me a few times in my life, you know, behind shows and, you know, in the dressing room, where he says to the roadie, oh, can you bring the guitar for Ana Maria? And all of a sudden, you know, I have like, you know, Tom Petty or George Harrison or, you know, some kind of luminary in my dressing room. And he said, oh, can you sing a song for them? And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, I got used to it. And he did that to me with Bob. He said to somebody, can you bring the guitar? And then he brought the guitar. I didn't know why he wanted the guitar. I was there, Dylan, Dave, and me, myself. And then he said, yeah, Anna, can you sing a song for Bob? And then he left.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yes. And he left me on the room, and I just sang a song for him. And I was going like, and he was very attentive and very complimentary. And I said, oh, thank you so much. I was kind of like a little bit nearly apologetic. I thought, God, this is, you know, I'm not going to match this. You know, it's kind of nearly imposing this. But he was very kind, very, you know, with a lot of elegance, because he was kind and complimentary, but not overly, just really very. The word is elegant. I don't know which other word to find. When we went back to the studio and he had that little walk and that little rest, we went to a restaurant in Crouch End. And he was quite quiet most of the time. He was very quiet. He'll speak to Dave. And then he wanted to know about my Amazon trip. He was very interested.
Oh, great.
Yeah, he was very interested, and I was telling, you know, little kind of stories about it and everything. But he was quite quiet, not kind of just listening. And then all of a sudden he stretched to me and just put his hand in my arm and he said, I have two daughters. One is called Anna and the other Maria. And then moved back.
Oh, that's yeah, so nice.
Yeah, very nice, very nice. And after we had the dinner, me and Dave, we were all excited and said, oh, let's develop this photograph. So we went to Covent Garden, to this photography place it was called Joe's Basement. It doesn't exist anymore, but it, you know, you could bring your films 24 hours and they will be ready in an hour. So we went there, and Dave had a flat very near there in Covent Garden. So we went for an hour to Dave's flat, and we were going like, yeah, we can go back. It's an hour. And then we went and got the pictures, and we were looking at the pictures, and Dave said, I'll bring them. Bob was going the next day to LA, and Dave was going the following day. So he took all the pictures. And then the other day, so it's 3 days after the video was filmed and I took the photographs, that somebody called me and said, you know, Bob wants this photograph to be the cover of the album. So it was like a real kind of, you know, like so spontaneous and so kind of not expected, if you know what I mean. There is a sense to me that people that really integrate their life to what they are and their work, they react to life. If you know what I mean. Oh, I'm London. Oh, we'll call Dave Stewart and they do this and then this. Oh, it's a hat, a top hat. And, you know, Dave said, bring the friend to take the pictures. And, oh, the pictures are good. You know, it's all very spontaneous. Oh, so that was my experience. I don't know about the rest of his career because I'm not an expert. But I've seen people that work like that. And other people that work where everything is very calculating, you know, and they think about it and they really don't leave anything to chance. Definitely this.
That's not Bob, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know if this was special or that's the way he functions. It seems to me that a lot of his covers and things are to do very integrated to his life. And you know, there is something very nice in that series of the cafe photographs. And is that, I don't know if you've seen the painting that is behind him. It's by a guy called, it's an Irish guy called Peter Gallagher. And he had those paintings hanging in that cafe. I mean, this cafe doesn't even exist anymore. He had it hanging, you know, two or three pictures, and so happened to be behind. And it's very curious, but if you look at some of the Dylan's paintings, they're very in that vein, you know? If you look at it, I don't know if you would recognize it or it's my imagination, but
I read, and I don't know if this was on your site or in related material I've been looking at, but that they sent Bob's people after they decided that photo was going to be the cover, that mm-hmm. they sent someone to buy it. So they own the rights.
That's right.
And it had already been sold. So they had to find the person who bought it and buy it off of them. Maybe that's you right. The one who told the story. Yeah, that's very interesting.
That's right. Because I never met him, but he came to the exhibition and he came introduce himself to me. And he told me, very nice man, very nice man. And he told me about his, they immediately went to buy that painting. I don't know where it is or what, but it was definitely bought.
I want to go back to something you talked about before, because I've always thought it interesting about those photos, the role you say Bob was playing, because he does look disaffected and a little bit distant. You know, he's signing autographs and kind of, you know, not engaged. And it's one of the things I think that makes the photos distinctive, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the costume, the jacket and the hat mm-hmm. does, but it's also kind of Bob interacting with the world. You know, you and I talked about that one photo that I love so much of a woman talking to Bob.
Yes.
And Dave shooting Bob. And yes. To me, it's just Bob kind of being, you know, the press on one side and fans on the other and Bob in his own world, which
I think that's right.
Of a lot. But it's interesting to me that you noticed in real time that he had adopted a
persona
for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because you can see after we went to the cafe, we walked and we sat in another cafe that was by the canal, and then also we borrowed a dog, a German Shepherd, to walk with Bob. I don't know, the German Shepherd with a little kind of wood, kind of a piece of wood in his mouth. Really lovely dog. And then we went to a barge that Dave had in the canal. And we took some pictures inside. As a matter of fact, one of those pictures is in the inside sleeve of World Gone Wrong. And we filmed with lights. Somebody had lights. It was very difficult, the lighting, I remember. But he was doing a very distinctive kind of acting. He had a whiskey glass, and he was very distinctive, and he was looking kind of diagonally up, far and beyond. It was, and I think he was doing a lot of that through the other pictures. If you see all of them, you can see that he's really, really very engaged in doing this video or acting out what is in his mind. So I don't know how he, I've met him another time in Rio de Janeiro. We had, we were playing in Rio. I think it was Rock in Rio. I don't know. It was a big, big festival. And he was also playing in that festival. And I remember that we had our dressing room next to it. And I was very worried because I had to open this by myself. I had to open the whole show by myself. This was being, there was 200,000 people, and it was being broadcast to millions.
What year was this?
That was 1990. January or February 1990. I think it was Rock in Rio, and it was in the Sambódromo in Rio de Janeiro. There were 200,000 people at least in the audience.
So this is before the photo shoot?
This is before the photo shoot. This is a few years before, yeah.
Oh.
And I remember that I was going to open the show, so there were lots of cameras and everything, and I was opening it by myself. So I was completely kind of like, you know, it was like the launch of the Apollo for me, because, you know, you had, I don't know, dozens of camera crews all talking, and they said, are you ready? Are you ready? And I remember, I'm ready. And then they said, 9, 8, you know, walk on stage on one. And I was just, so I could never really even look at Bob Dylan. I was very concentrated on something else. But I did saw the show on the wings of the stage. I came after and I saw the show, and it was really great. It was, I didn't know much of Bob Dylan then. I think I sang Blowing in the Wind with, or, you know, one of his major songs when I was like a teenager, but I didn't really know much. It was only after when I started, years after when I started looking at the pictures, and because the exhibition had a closing concert.
Talk about the exhibition. So the shots were taken in 93, and some years later you did this beautiful exhibition, which is, there's photos of on your site, and there's a video that I'll share the link of. So in 2000, what year was the, was that 2005?
That was in 2012.
2012, yeah. So and where was it? And it was a beautiful, huge room.
Yeah, it is in a place called the Test Bed in Battersea. It doesn't exist anymore. It's been developed as, you know, but it was an old Victorian milk depot. And it is this spectacular building, Victorian building, by the Thames in Battersea. And the room underneath, you know, it was empty, and it was run as a kind of a gallery space for artists by, and I knew this architect, Alsop, who had something to do with the building. He had his offices upstairs, and I went over there, and I ended up looking at this space, and I thought, this is the perfect space, but this is enormous, enormous space. But I've got to find a way of presenting it in a way that, you know, makes it justice, because, you know, when you have a space like that, and then it had a space on the one side, and I thought, well, as I started to develop the idea of doing this exhibition, I thought I had to approach, you know, Dylan and give, you know, get the permission, and And I thought, well, I want to do a closing concert and get a few artists to come and sing Dylan songs. And we did it for charity, actually. We did an auction, and we were supporting a charity called FOXA, that is for children. And but as I was doing that, I started to really go into the songs and to read more. And I've been a massive poetry kind of fan for years, since I was 18. But that was already installed on me, the poetry. And, but, you know, so I have this kind of gusto for poetry, but I never really went into the Dylan songs. And I remember being so silly that even one time I was with Chrissy Hynde, the girl of the Pretenders, the singer of the Pretenders. And she said to me, you know, I don't think photography is art. You know, it can't match painting. And I thought, but Linda McCartney is your friend, and she's a great photographer. And then I said, well, you know, I love reading Dylan, but I can't listen to him. And I didn't have this concept. I started to listen. I've been very backwards in my life. It was like I started to understand things, you know, backwards. I was like decades behind. And then my husband, who is a musician and he's also an artist, he would say, no, you gotta listen how he sings. He's influenced everybody. Just listen. And he started pointing out, and I started to listen and to study all these songs, because we were choosing songs for the concert. And all of a sudden I said, oh my God, I opened a huge vault of like a treasure. And I start to realize that all these people are, you know, all the beat generation, that's all related to all these lyrics of Dylan and all the poetry that I was incredibly keen in my very youth years, like William Blake and Ibsen, and you know, all these incredible great poets, even Goethe and whatever. All of a sudden it opened in front of my eyes. But it was like it all of a sudden the penny dropped. I said, oh my God, I've been missing something.
Do you think it helped to have to not be over? You would have been more shocked to be given the job to photograph Dylan if you had had that realization earlier.
No, I was aware that he was a big, big personality. Of course, I was.
I know, but I mean, I don't know. Once what sinks in, what you just described, once people realize, oh my God, this guy is this good and this big. You know, I think that's why he has problems with people, right? Because as you say, people don't know how to act around him.
Yeah.
It's hard to do.
You know what, Craig? I think I have a great gift in that sense. I don't get very starstruck. I'm impressed with people, but I don't kind of go out of my senses. And they've said that to me. I said, you know, you're so nice because you can just float around kind of invisibly and not make anybody uncomfortable. The fact that I discover, you know, Dylan and many other artists that I discover later in my life, because I've been out of face in a way, and I've kind of, in many ways, I was very early developer, and in other ways, very late developer. And I think if I was there, I would have realize probably more the magnitude of the artistry, but it wouldn't have changed very much my attitude. Yeah. Because, you know, what am I going to say? You know, you can't really, you know, it's great, it's there, but you can't, you have to be kind of respectful. I always have that. I've never been one. I've been around so many celebrities in my life. I never ask for an autograph. I think
that's very good policy. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't do that because unless they are interested to talk to me, I won't go and talk to them because what am I going to say? What do they want to say to know that everybody is trying to talk to them? Why would I be so special that they want to talk to me? Yeah. You know, I think, and sometimes it's very interesting because some of the great artists that I've known and I've known better, sometimes I think I'd much rather not know them actually. I'd much rather just know their work. It would not break the spell really, you know, because they're all human beings after all. And many times they're great people, many times they're not. And anyway, they have their private lives. You have to respect people.
Yeah.
Whether you're famous or not famous so more a person like Dylan, I mean, he must be, you know, kind of yearning to lock himself in a room every day after a few hours out, you know?
So let's talk about this. You know, this is, you know, you got a phone call early in the morning in 1993. Jump out of bed and shoot these amazing photos with Dave Stewart and Bob Dylan. Bob chooses it for an album cover. You know, a decade later, you did this beautiful show and you told me, I think there was a second show. Does it come up in your life a lot? Is this is interesting old, you know, story for you that once in a while, a guy like me comes along and is super interested, or is there something about it that?
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Some people have known me doing things and they never know, realize I've done those pictures. And one day they say, oh my God. And you know, they don't even know. It's not something I talk too much, but when I decided to do the exhibition, I had to really kind of open up, take them out of the vault and present them. And if people are interested, they, you know, I'm very happy to talk about it because if they are interested to know, I'll tell them the story like I'm telling it to you. But it's a day in my life, you know?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm asking. It's interesting because for a lot of people, you know, I mean, the Dylan people are particularly focused, let's just say, you know, and especially on excavating all these historical things. And it's great now. A lot of people get to tell these stories and we learn. You know, we've seen the cover photo. Most people have probably seen two or three of your other photos. Now they can go to the website and see more. They care about it. And there's so much more there, as you've, you know, just told us about what the day was like and what Bob was like and the way he approached it and why it looks that way. It's really an interesting thing. And also we're able to look at those albums for many of us, right? That song and that video and your photos represents a special period that we're now 30 years past in Bob's, you know, in Bob's life, but it was a very distinctive period.
No, it's definitely, Craig, it's definitely a great memory. It's definitely a great memory and something that you really look back and said, oh, what a great thing. And I am very happy to share it with people that have that interest, you know, because I have gone through the trouble of really kind of looking at those photographs really carefully and try to present them in the best light possible. And I think if people are interested, I am very happy because anything that you do in life, you should do to bring joy to people. And that alone makes it worth it for me. But it's not about me, really.
Yeah, I understand.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I told you when we talked how I felt. It's so amazing to see those photos, and I'm anxious to, you know, even see more of them. But to see that they were presented that way, first of all, as I told you, it just makes me often in Dylan, you find these things and you just, my mind immediately goes to, how do I go back? You know, how did I miss that show? It's so sad that it was these beautiful photos and you had them enlarged, you know, gigantic, and yeah, with the light boxes and all the versions of it. And it does make people happy. And now we have, you know, we have your website, as you told me, you know, you've got a few booklets, and you and I are talking about maybe there's a way to get those to some people. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a future, you know, with the photos that more people can see them, you know, as well, which is,
yeah,
which
I hope so.
In real life, which is, would be great.
I brought them to, Sweden. That was in 2005. I went to Sweden. I think is that. I'm not completely sure. It could be give me here and there. But, and then before the pandemic, I was bringing them to Brazil. And my friend, who is a great impresario, that she does fantastic kind of concerts and events in Brazil, in London she does, in Europe in general. She found this amazing place and we were all very excited and everything. And then the pandemic came and till now they have been locked in storage, my photographs, because I had reprinted the ones that I had sold to be able to make the show complete. So I have the whole show in a, you know, in a storage space, and that was sad. So definitely I'll keep moving. And it has been really wonderful to do the shows because as you say, you know, Dylan fans are so, you know, it brings them so much happiness to see those photographs, so much happiness that I feel really happy. And they write to me all the time and they tell me, and I feel really happy for that. I said, you know, I'm so happy to be able to give them this joy. And so hopefully it won't be the end of it.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, anyway, Anna, thank you for today, for taking the time. And the photos are wonderful. My thanks for all you've shared. And I'm glad maybe this show a little bit can help more people find the full scope of them and understand the story. Thanks for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you so much, Greg.
Thanks for listening. This show is a part of the FM Podcast Network. Visit us at fmpods.com.